Is it on? Put it where?
It's on already?
Yes, on running for.
All right.
Yeah.
What do you want?
They don't have sticky arms when you sit on your hands on the table.
Your flowers are beautiful, I assume those are yours?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got some for the pulpit. I just have to wait until they get the screen down. But thank you.
I'm trying to teach my girls the art of scraping crumbs into your hand while you wipe the table and set it on. wait, just a second, ladies. This is where we want to put this.
Oh my. Phil hasn't gotten that art yet. I can see him with his crumbs doing like this. And I'm thinking, okay, buddy, you're the one that does the vacuum. You go ahead.
That's all right. If you're enjoying that, you keep it up.
You notice I said, I'm thinking, I don't say it.
Sometimes it's just like, okay.
Julian.
Oh, sorry. Both you and Alice did the exact same thing.
Their hands.
If you have a napkin, you'll sit here and you'll press it, fold it, and press it.
Have you noticed that about yourself?
Not really.
Alice does it too, though.
Alice picks it up and then does this too.
Uh-huh.
And then on the table and flattens it out.
Or if it's a tablecloth.
I mean, that would be one way for people to know that you two are sisters.
The one way. Because there's only one.
That's the only one.
And you know, I just noticed I opened up my Bible.
You don't look at that.
Like I'm going to smooth this Bible out.
We're going to be here doing things quietly, so speak up.
I'll sit on the other side then, so it projects that way.
That'll move, so you're not yelling at me.
Thanks.
Oh, there it went again.
Oh, son.
It's all on your hands now.
It's fine.
No, it is not fine.
I'm so upset.
She looks distressed.
I don't know, maybe I'm shaking you too much.
No, I think because he probably wasn't that kind of
a. That's fine. He's got good clothes.
I'm not worried about yours. I don't care about you.
Oh, it's okay. It really is. You're going to feel the need to go take a shower now. He got my sister 3 times in 1 day. She had to change shirts 3 times.
I was coming to church for
him. You know when you do that and you're like, oh, I didn't realize that this son had a job.
You would be a dead
one way or another.
It'll probably be because he's a teenager.
I know.
He said, Mama, pace yourself. I will stress you out later.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Just put up Sharon the concern.
Can you guys hear me if I talk like this? Is that loud enough? Okay, so I really don't want to yell on the recorder. I don't even want the recorder on. I'm starting with the same points Melvin did. One, I am not the most qualified person to be doing this. I'm also not trying to meddle, step on people's toes, or say that this is the only way that it's going to be. Because we've already talked about everybody's marriage is different. Everybody works it out differently. My goal is to get us to understand that even if they're going to be different, the marriages still have to comply with what God said. So when God makes a statement and says, this is what marriage is and this is how it's supposed to be, such as husbands love your wives, wives submit to your husbands, I can't change that. So, but as long as you are still submitting and still loving, regardless of how it happens, then you're still complying to God's expectations for marriage. We all know the importance of marriage. I know some of this is just going to be a lot of review and discussion, and please feel free to make comments. I don't want it to be just me talking the whole time. Unfortunately, marriage is taken so lightly in society anymore. It's just if it works out, great. If it doesn't, you know what? It's no loss to me. 1 out of 2 marriages are failing. And even in the church, we're starting to see more and more that are failing because people just don't take the time to understand the importance of marriage. So there's 3 specific things I want to look at today as far as marriage and the importance of it. And it's, for once, I did good. I have like a little acronym thing. It's the ABCs of marriage. We're going to look at the attitude towards marriage, beauty in marriage, and commitment in marriage. So just remember, it's ABC. The first one is attitude. And something I want us to think about before we get started is, how do we really feel about marriage and my role as a wife? I've met people before that say, well, why in the world did God have to make me a woman? Because now I have to do X, Y, Z. Why can't the man do this? Or why can't the woman do this? Well, that's because God saw it fit to give the woman these roles and the man those roles. And so just think about, as we go through all this, how am I honestly feeling concerning marriage, and is it complying with what God said? There's times in the church where I think we fail to teach the importance of having a good attitude in marriage, as well as having a good attitude towards marriage. Sometimes people have a very bitter taste towards marriage because they've had a bad experience. Marriage in and of itself is never a bad thing. God created it. He made it perfect. Yes, there are times where people have bad experiences, but it does not make marriage itself bad. We can't look at somebody else's marriage, you know, if we're single, we can't look at somebody else's marriage and say, wow, I really don't like marriage now. Because that doesn't mean that's how it's going to be for us. And so just remember, and this is something Dad always told me growing up, attitude is everything. It will dictate our marriage for us, how our attitude is. We think about that even if we don't realize it sometimes, our attitude dictates whether or not we're having a good marriage at the moment or a bad marriage. Attitude is like, a woman's attitude in marriage is like the thermostat. It sets the temperature. I don't know if any of you guys have experienced this. I sure have. Waking up, having a bad day, I snap at Aaron, he goes to work, he can't function very well. Because he's thinking about the fact that I've snapped at him, he gets upset, and he can't focus on his job. And you know, they say with children pick up on people who are stressed, people who have, who are upset about things. Perfect example, we were at my grandparents' house, and an argument happened with my grandfather and my mom. Grandpa's blood sugar dropped, and he didn't know what he was doing, and he started yelling and arguing, and we were trying to reason with him. James picked up on that, and he started to almost cry. I mean, he really could tell there was something not right. And so, regardless of what our attitude is, children will pick up on it. They will also imitate our behavior. If we have a bad attitude towards our husbands, children are going to pick up on that at some point, and that is an example that they will see. And I think we need to make sure that whatever example we're giving our children is how it ought to be in marriage, which is having a good attitude. And I'm not saying that things are going to be perfect all the time, and that there's not going to be moments where we have a rough time and we're just really frustrated or struggling. But it's not going to be a consistent attitude. Just one of those people that's always a grouch, never happy to be around. That's going to make it hard for the husband and the wife. In Genesis 2, 21 through 24, if somebody gets there, if they want to read that.
Genesis 2 what?
21 through 24.
So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and while he slept, took one of his ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man, he made into a woman and brought her to the man. Then the man said, This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh.
Okay. Here in Genesis 2, we see that marriage was a beautiful and perfect institution created by God in the Garden of Eden. There was nothing imperfect about it. Because we also see everything that God created, he said it was good. And then after man was created, it was very good. So there was nothing, and this is also before Adam and Eve sinned, there was nothing wrong with marriage. And so when we're talking about marriage and we hear people grumbling or complaining about marriage and, oh, it's just, you know, just the old ball and chain or whatever, we're talking about something that God created. It's not just that we're talking about just a civil union between two people. We're talking about, it'd be as if I said, you know what, I'm just tired of being in the church. You know what? It's just really kind of annoying having to follow Christ and do what he says. Well, you're starting to talk about the institution that God created. And so we need to make sure that we're having the same attitude towards marriage that we would towards the church. Paul draws the parallel between a husband and wife and how they treat each other and the church and Christ. Somebody turn to Proverbs 31, verse 12, and read that for me, please. Yes.
She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life.
Okay. Here we're talking about the virtuous woman, and it says that she does her husband good and never evil all the days of her life. There's never any indication in any of these verses, starting from 10, going through the end of the chapter, that she ever has a begrudging attitude about what she has to do, but instead that she's acting out of love and respect for her husband and towards the relationship that she has. She willingly is staying up and working. It says she rises up while it's night. She makes sure her kids are clothed. Obviously, she has done things to help her husband be elevated among men because he's known in the gate with the older people. And so there's never an indication that she does anything with a begrudging attitude. I'm at fault with this one, really. Sometimes I struggle with the fact that because I'm the wife, I have to clean the bathrooms. I hate it. But you know what? And I think about the fact, you know what? I'm blessed because I have time to do it. I'm here. I have to think, okay, I'm blessed. I have a house. I have a roof over my head. Guess what? I'm going to clean the bathrooms. Things like that. And I'm not saying we can't not like something or that it's not our favorite task. But when we start, oh man, do I really have to cook another meal for my husband? Do I have to go do this? And sometimes husbands are willing to help out. Aaron, he'll go grocery shopping for me. He doesn't care. But when the husband says, you know what, this is what I'd like you to do, and it falls within that role that God gave us, then when we start to really, truly grumble and complain and say, I'm just tired of being a wife, then we're really kind of starting to step into the area of, wait a minute, you know, you willingly said you would do these things when we got married. Who of us never understood what was going to be required of us as a wife when we got married? And if not, then as we grow, then we still learn what is required of us. And so I want us to think about the fact, can it be said that we do our husbands good all the days of our life? Do we help them out? Do we elevate them? And Melvin made this point. They need to hear the encouragement of, thank you, I needed you to do this for me. And it boosts their ego. It makes them feel good about themselves, like I am needed, I am worth something. The next perspective I want to look at from the attitude, just to emphasize this, is something that Stephanie and I talked about. And in 1 John, John continually stresses the importance of loving our brethren and having that loving attitude. There are at least 10 references to Christians needing to love their brothers and sisters in Christ. 1 John 3:11 says, this is the message you've heard from the beginning, that you should love one another. And I had never considered this point till Stephanie said something, that if we don't love our husbands like we should, we're also not fulfilling that commandment, because our husband is our brother in Christ just as much as he is our husband. So when we have a bad attitude towards them, or we don't act like we should, or things along that line, we're not fulfilling 1 John 3:11. There's consequences for not loving our brethren, and which would be in turn our husbands. 1 John 3:14, he that loveth not his brother abideth in death. 1 John 4:8, he that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. And then there are rewards for when we love our brethren, and once again in turn our husbands. 1 John 4:7, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loves is born of God and knows God. 1 John 4:12, no man has seen God at any time. If we love one another, God dwells in us, and his love is perfected in us. So when we have the correct attitude, we are also complying with loving our brethren. If we don't, then we need to work in that area.
And doesn't that include putting their interest above our own interest? And,
yes.
And that's a hard thing to do sometimes, doing what is beneficial for them, not thinking about me.
Right. Sacrificing self for for others. Some questions to think about along this line, just while I was putting this lesson together. I think in questions a lot of times. And so I thought, do we murmur and complain about the role of a wife, or do we thank God for the opportunity to be a helpmeet to our husbands? Not everybody is blessed to have a husband or a wife, which way it goes. I can't imagine life without Aaron and without having that help beside me when things happen. Yes, I have friends, and I have really good friends, but when it comes right down to it, I know that I can always go talk to Aaron, and I have that help exactly right beside me, no matter what happens. Do we make jokes about marriage, you know, being the old ball and chain, or we're, you know, we're just such a slave to our husbands, or do we express the true joy found within marriage? Like I mentioned earlier, if somebody was single and they just see marriages that are failing and they hear people talking about marriage being just so horrible all the time, that can really discourage somebody from wanting to maybe get married because they think, oh, it's just going to be so horrible. I'm going to be so tied down. I'm not going to be able to do anything. But we can encourage them if we let them know what joy there really is within marriage.
I think that's something that's hard in our society and people that don't grow up in the church, which I didn't. And almost every single person in my family has been divorced at least once. So I never had a good example. So you don't grow up with that example. You don't know what marriage is supposed to be unless you learn from the Bible. And that way you just have a bad attitude about it. You go into it thinking you can just leave or, you know, you don't have the right commitment attitude.
And don't step on my foot.
But you know, I think that's a big part of the problem.
It is,
and not having good examples.
And I've heard people before say, I didn't have my parents to look up to in a good marriage because my parents didn't have a good marriage. I can't really say that. I was blessed to have a mom and dad who tried to do right in their marriage. But not all children have that. I mean, think of all the children today that grow up in single family homes and broken homes, and then we wonder why our children act the way they do. Well, they don't have structure. They don't have a father or a mother around to help them out.
But
that's,
you know,
a really good point.
Being brought up in a negative environment as far as marriage goes can also make you strive to do better. Because I came from a broken home, and Phil's home was not an ideal home by a long shot. But we talked about some things, even at, I was 17 when I got married, but we talked about some things that were important to us. Mm-hmm. And coming from the background that we came from made us try extra hard
not to
fall into that trap.
You didn't want it. Oh yeah,
we saw what we did not want.
Mm-hmm. And then when you see that negative example, then you have the positive, the perfect example, the Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, if we may look at other people's marriages and go, okay, that's good. Work on that, and I'm going to try to pick up that. But when we look at the Bible and see all of God's perfect examples of what marriage should be, then that's our main goal. You know, that's the more you read it, the more you study it, the more you can emulate God's will for it. You know, whether we're having a bad day with it. Or,
And I don't. I want to make sure I didn't say it the wrong way. There will be days where we're just, you know, just
can't stand
this. I can't stand this. I've got to get out. I mean, Aaron and I lived in a 600-foot square apartment. Let me tell you, when we got tired of being around each other, there was nowhere to go. We were forced to still be in the same area, and that is hard because there are times where I think, I've just got to get out of here. And those are the times where I said, okay, I got to go to Walmart. You know, I might say, I got to go pick something up, and I just go ahead and go to Walmart, be by myself for a little bit, and calm down. But there then becomes the issue if that is a daily occurrence. If that has happened daily, then we need to take a step back and think, okay, what's happening and how do I fix this problem? Another question I had is, do we get a bitter taste in our mouth when we see how much fun our single friends are having? You know, you lose some independence when you get married. You have somebody that is right there that you are now not necessarily required, but it is courteous to let them know what you're doing.
You're responsible to each other.
Yes, you are responsible, thank you. And you can't just be like somebody who's single and just, oh, you know, tonight I'm just gonna go up and I'm gonna go get together with some friends, go out and eat dinner and have a good time, go watch a movie. Wait a minute, you have somebody at home now that you're responsible to. And so the contrast of that would be, do we thank God that we do have that person we're responsible to? One, who keeps us in check. Two, who helps us through the bad times. Three, who we can share the good times with. And hey, I'm all for a night with just girlfriends as much as I am staying at home having a good time with Aaron. And there's nothing wrong one way or another, but there also has to be the balance. And are we continually unhappy with what our husbands do when they're trying to please us, or do we thank our husbands for making an effort? I'm stepping on my toes once again, because just the other day I said, Aaron, I need you to vacuum out the car. And then he comes in and I said, okay, did you make sure you got behind the seats? Did you make sure you got this thing? And he looked at me he looked at me as if, are you seriously asking me if I just did it the way you want it to be done? And he said, if you want it done that way, maybe next time think about the fact that if you want it done a certain way, you should do it. Well, I was not saying, thank you, honey, for doing what I asked. I was saying, did you, XYZ, did you do all these things, and did you do it how I would have done it? If I wanted it done a certain way, either do it myself or say, honey, can you make sure it's done this way? And so do we thank our husbands when they do something, even if it's not the way we would have wanted it, or do we just always say, man, did you really not think this one through? And then they're done that a lot. It's really easy to do when you're an independent person and now you've got somebody else that does things a different way. Some ways to combat the problems of attitude. I really got to hurry. I did not think I'd even have enough. One, learn to be happy. Happiness is a choice. Even when problems arise, you can choose to be happy and work through those together and say, you know what, we're going to make the best of it. Two, count your blessings. Are we still living and breathing? Do we have clothes on our back? Do we have a roof over our head? We're blessed with a husband that cares about us. Memorize scriptures. I've got a whole bunch of them. There's the ones in Ephesians 5, 22 and 23, 1 Peter 3, 1 through 4, the ones from 1 John, the ones in Proverbs that talk about the price of a virtuous woman plus what man wants to live with a contentious woman, things like that. I have to remind myself, Aaron does not want to be in a house with somebody who's grumpy and complaining all the time. So those are just some things concerning attitude. B is for beauty in marriage. I know that we talk a lot about the inner beauty and how important that is, but I actually want to talk about outer beauty. And to kind of introduce this, I want to quickly read a story that I was reading in this book. And by the way, for anybody that is interested, this is a great book. Her salvation stuff is very off. I think it's a just pray to God and he'll be saved. But her biblical principles on marriage are very good. She has a story in here about one ugly hillbilly. A few years back, there was an overweight hillbilly woman who worked in the local store in our hometown. Every time we went into the hardware store, several men would be standing around the counter talking to her, and they were always laughing. We usually had to wade through the cheerful crowd and interrupt the gaiety to get served. Her swarm of admirers reminded me of bees around the honey, buzzing with high interest. The strange thing was that this woman was ugly. I mean hillbilly ugly, which is worse than regular ugly. One day as we were leaving the store, I laughingly brought to my husband's attention all those men standing around and talking to the sales clerk. His reply really surprised me. Oh, you mean that cute little lady? Live and learn. And apparently I really had something important to learn. In his mind, that lady was cute. The truth is, she was not little, she was not cute, and she was not young. But she did smile, laugh, and giggle. She was always ready for a clean joke. I loved being in the store talking to her as much as the men did. She was delightful. A few weeks later, we saw her in the grocery store. She was mad at her very obese daughter for grabbing a handful of candy. Gone were the smiles, giggles, and radiance that had so captivated everyone at the hardware store. In their place was a bitter, ugly snarl. My husband remarked when we left the grocery store, "Haven't we seen that woman somewhere before? She looks familiar, but I just can't place her." When I told him who he was stunned. "No, it's not that possible. It just can't be her. The woman in the hardware store does not look like that." I could see the truth dawn on him, and he was so disappointed. The funny thing was that the woman just looked like she always did. She was the same size, same scraggly hairstyle, the same clothes style, the same everything when she was when we saw her in the hardware store. All she lacked was her glorious smile. It was her most valuable asset. Her face was always so radiant, her smile so infectious, her laugh so sweet, and her eyes so earnest that people simply saw her as cute. I don't know if she had a husband, but I'm sure she could have had a dozen different men in that small town, as long as they never saw her in the grocery store mad at her daughter. She then says, everyone is drawn to a smile and wants to be a friend to someone overflowing with goodwill. Men are highly attracted to smiles. That includes your husband. Do you want your husband to stay home more? A merry heart and a mischievous giggle are good drawing cards. A merry heart doth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bone. Proverbs 17:22. You may not be an ugly hillbilly, but there are other kinds of ugly. Women spend millions of dollars every year to make themselves more attractive, but the most effective beauty aid is free, a joyful smile. When I first read that, I thought, wow, you know, what about the power of a smile? Just the power of being friendly and outgoing, and just the contrast of this man just almost could not believe that this was the exact same person, all because she got upset and was very angry at her daughter. And so I started to think about how just our attitude will affect our outer beauty. She changed her appearance from one who was friendly and people wanted to be around to one who everybody wanted to avoid. And so I got to thinking about how we see ourselves just in general. When we think of beautiful, sometimes I think we get the image in our mind of that glitz and glamour of Hollywood and the perfectly toned skin and the perfect haircut. And, you know, and the list goes on and on. But I think when we start thinking about beautiful, we ought to think about the people whose inner beauty shines through. And inner beauty will affect our outer beauty. Once again, our attitude can affect how we look. The comment was made one time about somebody I knew who everybody thought they were awfully rude. Because when they were walking, they were focused on where they were going. They looked at nobody else and had a frown on their face. It was as if that person was unapproachable. But when that person stopped and just talked to people, had a smile on their face, once again, it makes a difference in our outer appearance. I found an article, or actually Aaron found it, about marriage. And the author was listing five ways that women sabotage their marriages. And the first one they listed was being insecure about our bodies and being unhappy and not thinking necessarily that we're beautiful. And so it said, you know you have this problem if you cringe and cover up when your partner sees you naked, compliments make you nervous and defensive, or you think that when you start thinking about his positive attributes, you wonder, why is he with me? Why does he think I'm beautiful? And one reason why I wanted to talk about this point is I've got some friends, and you would never know, or when you look at them, you know how secure she is about herself, even though she happens to be, you know, she doesn't necessarily like her hair, or it would not be what we would consider, quote, the perfect hairstyle. She's overweight, she, just lots of different things, but yet her husband, and this is an older couple, and her husband looks at her as if she was the only person on the face of this earth. And it's just so fun to watch them together. And I'm not trying to, I hope I'm really describing this the right way, because I told Aaron this was all gonna come out wrong, I just knew it. But she is not the most beautiful person in the world, but you know what? She has
that world standards.
By world standards.
Physical beauty.
Right? But she is a very loving person. I mean, everybody calls her Mama B, because she is just that grandmother caring person. And he is skinnier than Aaron, and it's just one of those, you look at the couple and you think, wait a minute here. But that love is in their eyes, and it's because she is so secure in who she is. She's comfortable with herself. And let me tell you, I had to get used to this one after having some stretch marks. Wow. Oh, Aaron, don't look at this. This is ugly. But don't we all have those things that we think about? And Aaron sat down with me, and the first thing he put was a big nose, because everybody harasses him about his big nose. He doesn't care. He'll joke about it. But don't we all have something at times that we think, man, I just wish, whether it be the stretch marks or that your skin doesn't tan, or Aaron put large ears, crooked teeth, and non-desired hair types. I mean, he just went to town on this list. I was like, help me think of these things. And he just went to town. He's like, let's put it this way. And I'm like, Aaron, it sounds like you're talking about your brothers here. Nathan, who has crooked teeth, you with a big nose, Adam, who has no hair. But you know what? I got to think about it. All, they are all so secure about this. But as women, sometimes we're not so secure about ourselves. We get to the point that we are not comfortable with ourselves. And so then he talks about why this was a problem. He said, when we're ashamed of our bodies, then we withdraw sexually and have problems being, quote, playful and free. This is some relationship expert. And then she talks about the fact that people, and I'm not saying as some, just in general, some education material, that people, when they're insecure, turn to substances to deal with this. Some people, when they're very insecure with themselves, start to drink. You know, I was watching a show the other night, a news thing, and they were showing this person who, she really started to get nervous and very insecure about herself. She just started drinking, and she just got she used it to cover how she really felt. And so, you know, doing that is immoral anyways. But it is a problem when we are not comfortable with ourselves. And a way to fix this, it's just one, realizing it, and two, just because your husband says you look beautiful in that dress, or and you hear go to the gym, it's not because he's being sarcastic, but because we don't feel secure about ourselves. I mean, I've sat there, Aaron has said, hey, that looks really good, and I'm like, what are you talking about? This makes me look fat. Way this shirt looks, are you really telling me this shirt looks good? But he really means it because he likes how it looks on me. And so,
I don't say, learn to take a compliment, Megan. And sometimes I was just like, I just can't believe you. And that's horrible of me to say. But he always has complimented me all over and over. That's kind of like what you're saying, like, why don't, I don't really, not that I don't believe you, but it's just hard for me to believe it's, like, you really think I'm that beautiful, you know, when I look at myself and I'm like, okay,
One of the points of why I wanted to talk about this, I think, is because our minds go to, what is everybody else going to say? What is another woman going to look at this shirt and think? Or what are they going to look at me and say?
Women dress
or even other men. Yes.
I mean,
we do.
Hairstyle, makeup,
jewelry. I don't remember where I heard this other day, but that's exactly what somebody said. I don't know if I was talking to a friend or what. And they said, women don't dress to impress men, generally. They try to outdress other women. Why does it have to be a competition? Why can't we all just wear what we like and be happy with it? You know, high school is full of the competition of, what are you wearing? Oh, I don't think she ought to be wearing that. That doesn't look very good. And, you know, I can remember that in high school. And that is hard, especially if you're not one that is the dressing like that style. And so I wanted to use that to move into the way we dress is to please our husband, yet still be modest. You know, we still have to make sure that we're modest, but we still dress to please our husband. My sister, if the first reaction she gets from her fiance of a shirt, if she tries it on and shows him and he's not sure about it, she immediately puts it back. I'm not that good about it, but you know, she in her mind says, I want to make sure that he likes the shirt I wear or how I dress, that it is something that he likes, a color that he likes.
You know, as long as it matches what God
wants
to dress.
Yes, as long as he wants to
dress and like,
no,
hanging out.
No, that is a good point.
Make sure, I'm just saying.
No, but make sure we're understanding there's also a line to being modest in what we wear.
I don't really believe a husband wants his wife showing her body off to other people.
I don't think that. A husband who truly loves his wife won't.
This is Phil's body.
It's his property.
It's private.
That's right. Yeah, you know, there's no reason to go. And that's another thing I've never understood. Well, actually, I understand it. It's difficult to understand that because some women don't get the compliments from their husbands, they then dress to impress other men and hear another man say something or get them to turn their heads.
And that's hard today because showing Mo is really in. It's all the dresses that are showing.
Especially young girls.
Yes.
The tiny dresses.
It's tiny.
Even your girls' ages.
Oh, yeah.
They get more and more risque.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And something Aaron helped me with and looked at was in 1 Timothy 2:9-10, the Greek word there when it talks about adorn yourselves in modest apparel, that word is actually the Greek word for cosmeo, which is what we get the word cosmetic for. And so Paul is really saying that the beautification process of the Christian woman is to be the individual who points people to God through the physical appearance. I mean, once again, going back to our outer demeanor, we can either draw people towards us in the sense of they want to be around us so we can use that to teach them, versus she doesn't look very friendly. I don't really know that I want to be around this person.
Well, you've heard people say, people want to know why you're so happy. Well, why are you so happy? Well, then that can lead you to a discussion of, well, this is the hope I have. Well, that's your drawing them in with your outer appearance.
Mm-hmm. And not a worldly appearance.
Right. Mm-hmm. Correct. And, you know, I know some people that take the extreme of modest and dressing appropriate to the extreme. You can be overly modest and still draw undue attention to yourselves. Mm-hmm. You can't go the extreme one way or the other. You got to find the balance of not alienating people because you are so extreme in your modest
That's
dressing,
a good point,
or you're so immodest that people look at you like, what do you have to say? You know, it talks in Proverbs about the person that dresses in a harlot's attire. People pick up on that, and it doesn't have to be standing on a street corner wearing that. It can be just walking down the street and people look at you
at
like,
the Walmart.
What are you wearing?
Mm-hmm. At any store now.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of it looks like the harlot's attire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Alex, we were Miley Cyrus has a clothing spot at Walmart, and Alex said, Mom, she doesn't have any pants on. She didn't. It was this tiny little dress, you know, just like a long shirt. She doesn't have any pants on. I know. That's why we don't buy her stuff.
And when we think about our looks and everything too, I always think of Matthew 5:28, where it says that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Yeah, the man's the one that looked, but it was because of the way the woman dressed. We are as much responsible for what the man thinks about what we wear as much as he is for looking at us. I read in a book one time, a Christian woman said this, and somebody who I would have never expected to say this said, if you're going to dress with short shorts, things like that, the time to do it would be in the church when it's around people who aren't going to look. Basically was her implication. If you're going to dress up modest, make sure you at least do it in the church.
Get over it.
And I thought, wait a minute.
That's even
well, how many okay. men, and I have heard, back at
so
home, I've heard men say
let's
this.
Let's just tempt Christian men.
Right. Yes, that was my point. And there was a man back at home who would not serve the Lord's Supper on a certain side of the auditorium because he knew he would see down somebody's shirt every Sunday morning. So we're going to tell people if you're going to wear it, at least wear it around people who know better than to look. So you're still going to, it's like dangling that carrot in front of the horse,
right.
You know. You're going to
still
tempt them. There's never a time to be immodest. There's never a time to wear something that you should not wear. It blew my mind when I read that in a book. And it was for Christian girls. It was a book for Christian girls. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me.
You should change that to if you're going to wear something immodest, do it in the bedroom.
Yeah,
then it's not
and then it's not even immodest. I mean,
immodest.
Yeah, but your point is correct. Yeah, don't wear something that you know better than to wear, and don't put a stumbling block in front of your Christian brothers. That is just—it still just blows my mind that a man would ever have to say in the church, "I cannot serve in a capacity that I would like to because of the way somebody's dressing."
Well, this is not a church, but it's a denomination where they will hand the women cloths to put over their knees so that the men who are serving or doing anything, or the preacher actually, when he's standing up high, is not looking down and seeing up someone's skirt or, you know, whatever, where they've got their legs crossed. And so if you've got a skirt that, I think just any length skirt, they just hand them up a cloth to put up, you know, that's part of what they do. And that, I mean, that's sad, but
yeah, it is. So I think you just remember that we need to be cautious of what we wear and how we dress. And going back to the Ugly Hillbilly, remember, I laugh every time I hear the name for the title. What Ugly Hillbilly? I hope she didn't read the book.
Poor her.
I know. I mean, she probably knows exactly who she won't know.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Is it? I work in a hardware store. You know,
I don't know.
But I think a key to this idea of beauty and marriage is mind over matter. One, learn to be happy with who we are, because we're all different, yet we're still all beautiful. God created us the way He wanted us. Everybody's different. I mean, even having a twin sister who looks almost exactly like me, we still look enough different that Aaron would not say, man, she's as beautiful as you are. I mean, you know what I mean? Everybody's just so different.
No, Adam says he got a pick of the litter when he sees me.
Very good, very good.
And I'm sure Brandon tells them all the same
thing. Yeah, and see, I think that's my point. Beauty's in the eyes of the beholder. I know it sounds so cliche, but it is. You may not think that my husband looks good, but I surely do. And I may not think that yours looks good, but you do. And that's what matters, is that that's the only one who you look to and look at. And once again, are we going to use our bodies to glorify God or draw undue attention to ourselves? And this is one of the struggle things. Are we going to let culture dictate to us what beauty truly is, or are we going to set the standards for the girls and for our children? Are we going to teach our boys beauty is not the tan, perfect hair, swaying of the hips when she walks down the street, you know, that type of thing. So help me, I will pluck your eyes out, child, if you think that is. I mean, that is not what beauty is. And there's nothing wrong if somebody is that beautiful, as long as that inner beauty is there with it. And so
inner beauty outshines them.
I think of a friend of mine that no makeup, plain clothes, but she's one of the most beautiful people I know. I mean, she just got married. She's a beautiful bride, let me tell you. She looked amazing. But by our world standards, they would have just said, yeah, okay, whatever, and passed right on by. So beauty really is more than just our outer appearance. It is the inner shining through. But I wanted to talk about the outer because sometimes we neglect that. And so then we think, well, outer beauty doesn't matter. Somebody just made this point recently about dressing to please our husbands, in the sense of, do we dress nice? You know, I'm guilty of this. Throw on a t-shirt and a pair of shorts every day, all day long. Maybe Aaron would like to see me with my hair done and not just thrown up and I look like a slob every day. Does he care all the time? No. He tells people he fell in love with me in pajama pants at Bible camp. So it doesn't bother him. But, you know, if we're going to go out, I'm not going to just, yeah, I don't care what I look like. Because I want him to, you know, stand a little taller because, hey, look, I'm with my wife. I like the way she looks tonight. I hope that makes sense. The last point, real fast, I don't even know what time I'm supposed to stop, is commitment.
What were your sabotage points? Insecure about body? You said you had five of them.
Oh, I only used the first one. The rest of them, no.
I've got 5 points.
I have this article at home. I'll email it to whoever wants it. But that was the only one that applied to this lesson.
Okay.
The rest of them had to do with communication and a whole bunch of other things.
Okay.
This was ways you sabotage marriage.
Okay.
And so we're not talking about all those.
Schedule says 12:15.
Well, they haven't come back yet.
Until they start knocking on the door.
Commitment. I struggled trying to find a C1 because I thought communication, well, we hear that all the time. And so I thought about commitment. Society, we don't like the word commitment anymore. I shouldn't say nobody. A lot of people anymore don't have the sense of personal responsibility and personal accountability. Commitment is defined as an agreement or pledge to do something in the future, an engagement to assume a financial obligation at a future date, something pledged, the state or an instance of being obligated or emotionally impelled. We know what commitment is. It means you say you're going to do something, you do it. I don't know why it's so hard. And I understand if something comes up and you have to change on your word or do something. But when we go into marriage, when we say our vows, here's just a standard one, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and health, to love and to cherish, till death do us part. We all stood up there and said some semblance of that. And when I say we, I mean every person who's ever been married. They stood there and said something, and they knew full well that's what they were going to say.
Vows.
Yes.
What does a vow mean?
And now they say, well, I want to renege on that. I want to back out of this. I don't think I can do this till death do us part thing. It's all about mindset. Do we go in knowing that divorce is never an option? Or do we go in thinking, I'll give it, you know, what I think is my all, and if it just doesn't work, then I'll back out of it. It's like the people that say, well, let's just live together for a few months and see how it works, and then we might decide to get married. One, it's wrong to do that in the first place. And two, if you go into it with that mindset, it's not going to work. Yeah. You're not gonna see what it's like. And so it's become difficult in our society for people to remember till death does part, because it is every one out of two marriages failing. Oh, you can get a divorce for any reason now. Irreconcilable differences. If you can't come up with any other reason, it's still irreconcilable differences.
Going through with a commitment that causes you to grow. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you cop out on everything, you never do grow and mature. And that may sound like a selfish reason, but that is a reason to fulfill your commitments or vows, because you have to work at it, and working makes you grow.
Oh yeah, and yeah, I kept thinking about this, because I kept telling Aaron, can we find somebody else to do this lesson? Aaron, can I get somebody else? I really don't want to do this anymore. And he'd look at me and he's like, do you remember your last point? Commitment? Thanks, honey, yes, thanks.
I'm pretty sure you made me commit to this one.
Well, yeah, and I think I appreciate this.
And Julie made a good point, because I've only been about 6.5 years, but we dated for 3. So, you know, you feel like you pretty much know that person. It's a whole different ballgame when you get married. I think you're still shocked at
what you did.
And when you move in,
you're shocked at your commitment to another.
Right. And I mean, in that first year, we had a really, really rough first 3 months. We fought more than we ever fought in the entire relationship we ever had. Screaming, like bad, ugly fights that Christians are not supposed to have. And a lot of it was immaturity. And I remember him, we got in this huge fight. He got in his car, he left, he came back 10 minutes later. And he sat there, and I'm crying, I'm all upset. And he sits there and he goes, look, you know, basically that we made this commitment, you know, we don't believe in divorce. He was raised the same way. And, you know, let's get past this. We're stuck with each other. And that's a really kind of crude way to say it.
But it's true.
But it was kind of like that minute, it was like, okay. You know, a lot of it is just childish stuff. And I believe in the last 6 years I have moved past a lot of that. But I think it's very much a growing process. And a lot of it, I talk to Julie all the time, and she gives good advice, and I try to take that from people who have been married a long time and, you know, a role as a wife. And I think it's always going to be something that, you know, if you're headstrong and you want to be independent, I have to really fight that sometimes. I mean, I really do. And when I do fight that, and when I'm successful, our marriage is really good. And when I'm really happy, everything is usually really good. And you know, I don't know what it is about the woman being in that attitude, you know. Because he always tells, he feeds right off of me. If I'm negative, if I wake up and I just don't feel good, it's like then he's same way, it starts to go just like that, you know. And at least that's the way with us.
Stan says that when he comes home every day, as he's coming home, he's excited to come home. And depending on my attitude, as
and
he walks
can tell
in that door,
he walks in the door,
whether he wants to remain or go back to the office, you know, whether she's happy to see me, I feel great, or if she bites into me as soon as I walk in the door, you've already knocked him down a notch. I mean, you've already...
Sometimes it's not even biting at him. Sometimes it's just that you haven't had a good day,
right.
And mm-hmm. I'm quiet, and I'm focusing on dinner, and he's like, what's wrong with you? And then it starts just like that, and I'm going,
what do you mean,
wrong?
Wrong?
Nothing, nothing. And until it's like, why'd you even say that? You know, and it's like, you know.
Aaron and I went to a marriage seminar in Tennessee while we were in school. I don't know if anybody knows Eddie and Jeannie Gilpin. Wonderful marriage seminar. Oh, I wish I could have done ours. Just beautiful. If anybody ever had it down, it's probably them. I mean, unless they're not practicing what they teach. But it was wonderful. And something she said, or maybe he said, was about the fact that, yes, the moment the husband steps in that door will determine whether or not he wants to stay or leave by how the wife acts. But the wife and the husband also need to remember, one, they don't know how the other person's day is gone, so don't automatically assume that it is, that if it's the wife who's upset, that it's because the husband did something the moment he stepped in the door. Because they do think that, but then also they said something that they've seen before, maybe I read it somewhere, was when the husband gets home from work, let him have the 10 minutes mm-hmm. of taking his shoes off, getting into comfortable clothes, relaxing before you say, honey, do you know what happened to me today? This happened, the children did this, and you know, because they haven't had time to just have that downtime, and that's what they look forward to is coming home and, oh, no work.
At least hug them and kiss and say nice to see you, and then go, okay, guess what happened today?
As the home should be both about with
yes.
you.
Oh yeah.
When we're at home with the children, it does not always feel such a regular. But when the husband comes home from work mm-hmm. or you're together, the home should be your refuge.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure we shouldn't allow our husbands to have a little bit of wind down time, mm-hmm. even from our children. Maybe train our children not to jump on daddy's mm-hmm. the minute he comes to the door. And let him come in and just wind down a little bit because he had a hard day.
And we never know if he did have a rough day, and now, like I said, on the way home, he's excited to get home because, oh, my wife will be there. She can listen about my horrible day. And it can happen the same way that he walks in the door, honey, do you know what somebody did to me at work today? Or guess what the boss just did? Or things like that. Well, once again, you have no idea, and it is nice to have that downtime.
But I think, well, since I work as well.
I know Dad always wanted his.
I mean, we don't bring problems home from work. If we can, I mean, if something really big, obviously it's bothering you, need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But the little petty office dramas that go on at both of our works, we don't bring it home. I learned that from my parents. I never saw my dad talk about work, never. And my mom told me in my adult life that he never came home with it. Even when in their private time, he never would say, she never knew half of what went on, that he was passed for this promotion or, you know, dramas that come along with the office politics yeah. and stuff. And I try to remember that sometimes because, you know, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about his work problem. You know, that's the time when you want to talk about your children or, you know, that kind of stuff.
It What's can important. Get, and I've had to learn this from the standpoint of, because of Aaron's position, I like to know things. I like to know what he's done all day long because we got used to talking over email every day when I lived in Missouri and he lived out here in this area. If we didn't talk to each other about what happened during the day, we'd have nothing to talk about.
Oh, I mean, that's true. I mean, like, you know, no, so, being trained or doing
right,
something new. But
then I got used to, hey, tell me everything you did today. I'd like to know because I was so used to knowing everything. Well, one, if he's just working on sermons, he's like, this is the title, that's it. Yeah. You can wait till Sunday. But then there are things that do happen. People that call, people that stop by, things that happen that I have, it doesn't matter if I know and I don't need to know. I think like
there's Melvin a lot talked that he about. Can't tell you.
Right. Yeah, and I think like Melvin talked about we like to know the details. Women want to know every single detail about things because we like to just know what's going on. Why do women tend to talk and it turn into gossip? Because we like to know the details. We like to know, hey, did you hear what happened? Well, yeah, and sometimes it is out of concern, but that doesn't mean it's still not gossip. But it is hard knowing there's nothing I don't need to know. And Mom said with Dad coming home from men's meetings, she got frustrated because there would be things that would go on in the men's meetings that they were not to go tell their wives. And then the men went home and talked. And Mom felt out of it because Dad was very much quiet about it all. Dad, he got very upset one time because somebody else told us what happened. And so then we knew we weren't supposed to know. Well, when you're not supposed to talk about it, just don't talk about it. And so that is hard for those of us that like to know.
Or if there's something that they're having a big issue with. Mm-hmm. You know, and you want to be able to help them through that, but you really can't because they can't tell you what's going on. Mm-hmm. That's hard for me on a personal.
Yep.
I'm like, just tell me. Even though I really don't want to know, you know, but I just want to be able to help him.
And there is a difference in somebody saying, don't tell anybody, but the husband's still talking to the wife. There have been times where Andrew's told people, I won't tell other people, but I may talk to my wife about it because I will need to talk to somebody. And I trust my wife not to go say something. So real fast, back to commitment. God joins, once God joins two individuals in marriage, they're joined for life. I know we all understand commitments. We practice this in our friendships. And, you know, when we start to say, well, I just don't know how I can make this work anymore, I don't know that I've ever said that about a friendship. So why would I say it about my marriage with my best friend? If I've got a problem with my friend Anna, you know what? I'm going to go talk to her. We're going to work it out, figure out what's going on. It may take me a while to work up the courage to ask her, hey, what happened? But eventually I talk to her about it. But sometimes with our husbands, we just want to say, just forget about it. I don't even want to talk about it. And, you know, do we give them a cold shoulder or just refuse to talk to them or just get upset and say, well, I just don't want to talk about it anymore because you're not listening. Well, are they really listening and we're just not thinking they are or, you know, things like that. So when we are having problems or things happen, just, I think, put the same principles into practice that we use with our regular friendships. I just really want to read this real fast because I thought it was really good. The meaning of commitment in marriage, with communication being key. The flow of communication should be such that they are seldom guessing what is going on inside the other. When the flow is blocked, commitment means recognizing this, deciding that it's unacceptable, and taking action to dislodge the impediment. Commitment to marriage implies that a person accepts the problems brought into the marriage by their spouse as a mutual problem. Just as your spouse's physical problems become yours to share, so do their habits, quirks, and psychological faults. We usually find it less difficult to share dental bills and offer condolences when our spouse's headaches than to deal with the chronic lateness or explosive anger. Commitment calls us to find our role in coping with every problem that arises in marriage, whether the problem is generated within our spouse or ourselves. Basically, the point is we handle the little things and say, yeah, okay, take care of the bills together. You know, I'm sorry your head hurts. But when it's something that is really starting to bother us, do we not have that same... We should have the same tolerance and same patience when it's something else. So, and just remember there's a cost to commitment. I think like you said, commitment makes us grow. There's going to be a cost to it. We understand it when it comes to athletics, things like that. You know, it's going to cost physical pain. Miss 5K over here. I mean, you get up and you have to run. You have to keep at it. It takes time, effort. And so there will be times there is the emotional pain in marriage or things like that. But it's worth it in the end. Because it makes your marriage stronger. Just as commitment makes us grow personally, the marriage itself will grow as well. So those were the three I had, attitude, beating, commitment.
Good job.
I hope it's been beneficial. I didn't know where to go. I mean, there's like thousands of books on marriage. And I'm like, I can't talk about all thousands
really
of things and all these. So thank you. And thank you for the input. I hate to just be the only one talking. I'd much rather just have discussion than
lecture.
I would rather talk and not get thrown on material and make sure that people like what's being talked about. We don't have to like it, we just have to do it.
Oh, you mean that commitment thing?
Yeah.
But if something happens, I'm like, oh, I don't know that so far.
I saw a flyer from him off the speaker last night and thought of, I told him, I need you to pick me up a Hello Kitty.